Well, I would like this morning, for a short while, to ask you to ponder with me a few thoughts from the passage that I read in Acts. So it was Acts chapter 10 that I read from, and let me just read these words, all right? Okay. And Cornelius, this is Cornelius now, starting a speech before some people who were listening to him. Cornelius started saying, or said, this is verse 30 of Acts 10, 4 days ago I was fasting until this hour, and at the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing and said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, and thine alms are had in remembrance in thy sight. Send therefore to Joppa, and call hither Simon, whose surname is Peter. And so he goes on. Now that's an extract then of a speech that is being given by this man named Cornelius that we hear about in this part of the account of the Acts of the Apostles. When I introduced the reading a moment ago, I said that the Acts of the Apostles is really the story of the life of the very early Christian church. So here we are then in the months, the years that came immediately following the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus. And it's the account of the life of the early church. There's very little told, actually, about the everyday members of the church. The other week I preached on a woman named Dorcas, or Tabitha, and she is one of the very few everyday members that we hear of in the church in this account of the life of the early church. It's told through the lenses of the activities of the apostles who traveled proclaiming the good news of what God had done in and through Jesus Christ. So they are sent by the risen Jesus. It's really the activity of Jesus now as he calls these apostles and sends them and works through them and what they are doing in that sense. And this moment here now, although it might not be readily apparent from the verse that I've just read, is actually a very, very important moment in the account of the story of the life of the early church, the account of the Acts of the Apostles. I said that it might not stand out as being a very important moment, because after all, what we're hearing of here is Cornelius saying, in effect, to a group of people that were now listening to him, well, listen, I had a, I think it's referred to here as a vision or a dream. And he's explaining his dream, his vision, and the vision doesn't seem very much. He believes that he heard and saw a heavenly vision and was asked to go and descend for Peter, who was one of the apostles, and he did. And Peter comes and starts to say how it was that he has also had a vision, a dream. Amazing, isn't it? Nonetheless, it's a very important, significant moment here. Now, every day, in a way, is very important. Of course it is. My mind goes to a hymn. I haven't sung this hymn for years. My mind goes to a hymn that I grew up singing. I need thee every hour. I don't know if you were familiar with that hymn. Well, one of the reasons why we need the Lord every hour is because, in a sense, every hour matters. Every day matters. In one place in the New Testament, people are told to redeem the time, buy back the time, make the time that you have in life count, because it matters. And it stands to reason that every day matters, every moment matters, significant things happen. But some moments, what shall we say, sometimes are like the door of history, as it were, swings. Let's put it that way. All right, so a door swings open. Okay, the door of history swings. Here's one. The victory of World War II. Now, if that hadn't played out in the way that it did, I think the course of history would have been very different to what it was. I was listening to some people talking as I was travelling around the other day on the radio, and they were talking about all of the ways that now we use computers and online to communicate. And this one fellow started saying, yes, indeed, and you can trace it all the way back to the first time when people ever spoke on the telephone. Isn't that amazing? Back in the 1880s, and he started to say, really, what's happened in the last 150 years is that we have lived through a kind of communications revolution, apart from anything else, and that has changed. So the time when the telephone was invented, in a sense, changed. Things changed. History changed. The world, in a sense, in one way, became a different kind of place. Now, there are many moments like this in the Bible. The coming of Jesus into the world, leading to his cross and resurrection, is perhaps the greatest of all. Take the perhaps out. It is. It is the fulfillment of all moments that a swing, the door of history swings on. There are other moments in the Bible. Those of you who are familiar with them, and it doesn't matter at all to what I'm saying if you're not, but the call of Abraham in the Old Testament. My goodness! It's not just history. It's like, in a sense, creation. The very makeup of the world is changing through these events. Or Moses and his call in the burning bush. And here's another. A great turning point is happening here in the Acts of the Apostles. Things were not going to be the same afterwards as they were before. The door of history is swinging open in this way. Now, we might need to have a good drink of, I don't know, let's say water or something, or Ribena or squash or something to appreciate just why this is such an important moment here, because we live so far, 2,000 or so years on the other side of it, that it's very difficult for us to, nonetheless. It's a very, very important moment, because what we're dealing with here in the account of the Acts is about the breakthrough of the gospel. Gospel means good news. The breakthrough of the good news of Jesus, of what God, who and what God is in and through Jesus, and what he has done in Jesus, is breaking through into the Gentile world. I told you that we might need a good drink of squash or something to digest that. We live so far on the other side of it. Gentile world, not just the Jewish world. Out into the rest of the world. There was an old promise of God that the nations, all peoples, would come to know him and worship him. Here it is. It's being fulfilled, that promise, in a perhaps unexpected ways. Now, Luke writes the Acts of the Apostles. He writes his gospel, as far as we know. He writes the Acts of the Apostles too. You know, we can tell what an important moment this is in the Acts of the Apostles because of the length that is given to it in what we are told. In fact, in a way, we're told the story more than once, from different places, from different perspectives. And that shows how important it is to when this was being written in the first instance. Reminds me, saying that, you know, of the preacher now, who kept preaching the same sermon. And then somebody came up to him and said, why are you always preaching the same sermon? He said, can't you change it for once? And the preacher answered, and he said, well, it's simple. He said, nobody's listened until now, so I'm going to keep preaching it until they do. I think, you know, well, there's a good reason for repeating something. We can repeat something for all sorts of reasons. I talk with my mother on the phone, or I go and see her. She's now 90 years old, and she is wonder. But sometimes she'll say, can I tell you this? And she'll start talking, and she's like me. When she starts talking, she doesn't readily stop, and she goes on, and she tells me this long story, and I think, oh, I heard this yesterday, and I heard it, in fact, the day before. Well, there we are. We can all be a bit like that. We can forget that we've said something, and so we say it again. Or sometimes we can end up saying the same thing again because, well, I don't know. We've got nothing else much to say. It can be just because what we've got to say is really important. In the passage I read from John's Gospel, Jesus says repeatedly, verily, verily, truly, truly, listen to what I'm saying. In one place, Jesus says to two sisters, to the one sister named Martha, Martha, Martha. And I always like to think, and it's silly really, because I'm sure it didn't happen this way, I always like to think that Jesus was tapping a table there and, Martha, Martha, will you listen? Stop and pay attention. Because what I've got to say to you matters. And he went on to say, one thing matters, Martha, in life. Really? You're distracted by all sorts of doing good in all sorts. One thing matters. Martha, Martha, will you listen? He repeats himself. This matters. The breakthrough of the gospel, the good news into the Gentile world. Lots of the Jewish leaders at the time had come to believe that it was completely different, that they should just like protect anything to do with faith, anything to do with how they understood God to themselves. And they took that very seriously. You might know the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan, how a fellow was in a dreadful state on a road, and two leaders of the religion walked by, but a Samaritan stopped to help him. That's part of the point. With God, it's all peoples. If we end up trying to, the Samaritan was the least expected person in the world to stop and help. That's the point. It's all peoples. If we end up in a place where we are bracketing ourselves and saying that, look, God is only just for, Jesus is just for people who look like this, who are this shape, who are from this place or from, you know, Jesus was saying it's not like that. And here, Cornelius is a Roman centurion who has been brought into the family of God, into the family of Jesus Christ. Wow! A Roman centurion? My! Amazing. Do you know that this moment is so important that in many ways it's reflected through large parts of the rest of the New Testament? You might know the name Paul the Apostle. Paul the Apostle wrote lots of letters that are in the New Testament. As he traveled from place to place preaching, he then wrote letters to places, to the churches that sprung up around his preaching. And sometimes he wrote letters to churches that he hadn't met in person. And so often, what's the language he uses? He speaks like this. He says, I am the apostle to the Gentiles. Wow! And he writes like this. God and what God is doing in Jesus is for the Jewish people and for the Gentiles. It's for the Gentiles and it's for the Jews. Wow! It's a remarkable moment here. Luke, it seems, many people think, had a great sympathy for an outsider, for somebody who was new to something, for somebody who was different, for somebody who was, yeah. He is writing this, inspired by God, we believe in what he is doing, and he's making the same point in his own way again here. Could I just say, I come from Mid Wales. If it hadn't been for this breakthrough moment here under God's good grace and in what he is doing through Jesus, well, the good news might never have come to Mid Wales. Certainly not in the way that it did, or here. To you in Lakenheath. God is sending his good news even to the Gentiles. Wow! Wow! Right, now I come back to where we started with Cornelius, because there is something deeply unexpected here. From my book, there is anyway. We're obliged to say that if this is an account, and it's a lengthy account, okay, that's about the things that I've just been trying to outline, that's filled with such enormous consequence in so many ways, which it is, it also hinges upon something that is apparently almost so simple, if I can put it like that. Simple ideas. I sometimes, just for a moment's break, on YouTube, as I'm there sat working, I watch a bit of something like, I don't know, I put on a clip of Dragon's Den or something like that. I don't know why I put that on. It's just come up at me, I think, and I put it on. Simple ideas, they seem to be saying. Simple ideas that really, you know, my, what a difference they can make. It isn't a simple idea that's happening here. It's something that seems so simple, though. Cornelius stands before his listeners, telling about how, before any of these big things that we're talking about here really get underway, he has this vision. And what's the vision? What did he hear or see in this vision? That he should send for Peter the Apostle, who was nearby in a place called Joppa. So he does. Hardly seems that monumental, does it? But when he calls for Peter, Peter now comes and starts saying, I had a vision. The day after Cornelius had a vision. If Cornelius had his vision 4 days ago, well, mine was 3 days ago, and it was what to do with. It was about how, really, the good news of God was to start breaking out into all the world. But all that it was at that time, a vision, like a dream. And that's the hinge. And I wanted to say that that is extraordinary. Because two men here with visions who responded to what they believed was being said to them through these visions, and the rest unfolds from there, we might well wonder what would have happened had they ignored them, not responded, being disobedient to what they believed they were being called upon to do or to be in light of it. The breakthrough of the gospel into the Gentile lands, into the wider world, might never have happened. In the way in which it did, anyway. My! Now, what do we make of visions and dreams? That's part of what is extraordinary about this. We're coming up towards Christmas. Now, the Christmas stories, the accounts of the birth of Jesus, told us primarily by Luke again, who's writing the Acts, who wrote his gospel, is filled with people who are having like visions, dreams. And they're all over the Bible. Some very famous characters from the Bible, Joseph, you know, Daniel, we can go, and they're very important. Sometimes people say in the modern day, well, you know, we have a dream and we remember things in a dream in a particular sort of a way sometimes because we've eaten the wrong kind of food before we go to bed. It's this, isn't it? Here it is. God speaks. I'm not saying because we've eaten the wrong kind of food before we go to bed. I don't mean that. That's ridiculous and stupid. I'm not saying that at all. Jesus, who was crucified for the sins of the world, for the sins of his people, who was risen from the dead, is alive, is the Lord of the world, working his purposes out, speaks. Now, it might be in dreams. People years ago, it seems to be like that, but it might be in all sorts of ways. He speaks. He makes his voice heard. He does, doesn't he? Because he calls us into faith. A relationship with him, you know, of faith, of trust. We are not here because we reckon to be good people who are necessarily deserving of anything. We are here because Jesus has given his life for the sins of the world, is risen, and calls us to trust him as the Saviour, as the Lord, as the one who said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. Jesus calls us into a relationship of faith and truth, and at the heart of that, he speaks. The person Jesus, who is God and yet man, he speaks. Follow me. That's one of the things that Jesus said. And how many people have heard that to this day? How many people hear that to this very day? Follow me. Rise up and follow me. And so many people say, what, me? Luke is writing for the outsider, for Cornelius, and for others. And he's writing about the breakthrough of the good news of Jesus to the outer world. Me? Turn around. You know, there's the famous story, isn't there, that Jesus told of the prodigal son. It's supposed to be, I think, the most famous story ever told, and one of the most loved stories. It tells, doesn't it, of how the one lad took from his father his inheritance and went and spent it doing I do not know what. And then when his life had right bottomed out, we read this fascinating phrase, he came to his senses and he started to turn and to look again and he decided to come back home. Knowing or believing in himself that now, well, he would just have to be a servant or a slave at home, not a son anymore. But when he gets home, the father has been waiting for him and wraps his arms around him. Quick, the father says, get a robe, get a family robe and put it on him. Get a ring, put it on his finger. For this son of mine, who was effectively in a way dead, is alive again. And it's a picture of how God is with us. This lad came to his senses when he was at the lowest of all. How did he come to his senses? Well, he must have come to his senses partly because the Lord spoke to him. Turn around. Stop chasing after such silly things. That isn't life. Come back. Come home. And when he comes home, he finds the love of God, the love of Jesus, is abounding beyond abounding. Welcome home. Jesus speaks. Follow me. Rise up. Follow me. Turn around. Come back to me. Cast your burdens upon me. Do this for me. Go and do the... Oh, it might not be anything much, but it might be very important to him. Do you know, I say all of this. I've got to love, and I use that word advisedly, I love their singing deeply. The Southern Gospel singers in America, Bill Gaither and co. And some of their stuff is amazing. And back in the 1990s now, he did stuff with a group of old-time gospel singers. They were already past their, you know, they'd been singing for years. Okay, in the 1990s now, I found again on YouTube, I do some work, you know, I don't just listen to stuff on YouTube, but I found on YouTube a recording, one of these fellows being interviewed by Bill Gaither, 1990s. And this fellow now started to say, right, he said, I've got to be honest with you, he said, I look back to the 1970s, and by the 1970s, I'd already been singing gospel music and preaching about Jesus. I'd already been doing that for decades. But, he said, something happened in the 70s. Things turned, changed, and I started to think, what have I been doing? And the whole world of faith seemed to me to, And he said, I'm going to tell you something now. And he turned and he looked at Bill Gaither, who was interviewing him. And he turned to Bill Gaither and he said, I'm going to tell you something now, he said. I was sat down, this was back in the late 70s, talking to my wife about this. And he said the phone rang. And you think, okay, what's coming next? And this fellow now, tears started to come to his eyes. And he said the phone rang. And he looked at Bill Gaither and he said, it was you. And he said, you were asking me if I wanted to take part and sing in a project that you were doing of music. And he said, you had no idea about the state I was in. And he said, I tell you what, he said, I knew straight away that the Lord had called you, had prompted you, had urged you to pick up the phone and to ring me and to ask me to do that. And if you hadn't responded, he said, to what the Lord was pressing on you to do, and I didn't respond to what you said on the phone, I don't like to think where I would be today. It can be a simple phone call that we think is just ringing somebody up to take part in a music event. God speaks. Jesus speaks. He still does. Dreams? Maybe. Back in the day, certainly. Through people, events, circumstances. It might not be something that is so audible. It might be like a sigh or like a burden. It might be something that just does not leave you alone. When the Lord called me to start preaching, I ran from it for years.
Me? That's ridiculous.
He wouldn't leave me alone. And I'm deeply thankful that he didn't. And it's the best way by far. It might be just like that. And what he says to us and calls us to, if we respond, changes things. He changes things through what he calls us to. That's the point. He changes things. I come back to what I was saying. We might think, what, me? Come and cast your burdens upon me. And we think, eh? And yet when we do, we find that it's a journey of the soul, of faith. When we do, we find, my, everything is different and new and changed. And we can go on and on like that. But I wanted to say, a new day it was here in God's purposes. Because God gives a yesterday and puts today right, and it unfolds into the days that come. Cornelius said, 3 days or 4 days ago, I saw this, and he called for Peter, and Peter says, 3 days ago I had this, and they acted on what they were being told, and the events unfolded through the days that followed, and this is Christ's way. 2,000 or so years ago, Jesus on the cross and in the resurrection changed the world, changed our whole relationship with God, brings us to our Heavenly Father through faith in Jesus and to the Lord's purposes. It changes everything. And he's speaking to us today because of it. It's the voice of Jesus. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. My sheep know my voice. Follow me. You know, there is another voice that speaks. There are many voices that speak. One of the voices that speaks will say, oh, all this stuff about Jesus, about the way, the truth, the life, the good news, him calling us to faith, what? Come off it, that's rubbish. There is a voice that will say, when we sense that the Lord is gently prompting us just to do something so loving, so simple, don't be so stupid, what a waste of time. It's the voice of the devil. And the voice of the devil, you'll tie us in knots. But there's a nastiness to it. There's a... with Jesus. And he will always say, this is rubbish. But Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And it's the voice of grace and of love. And of a peace and of a gentleness, even if it can sometimes be like a burden. Altogether different, there isn't a voice like his. So loving, so divine, so wondrous, so gentle, and yet in another way through that, so powerful. The voice of Jesus. Well, I ask myself, and I simply ask you, and I must stop. I ask myself, am I listening? Will I respond? Who knows? It could be the hinge upon which my life changes from this point on forevermore. It could be a hinge upon which other things change for other people and for a people like it was here. Something so simple, and yet perhaps more real than anything else in all the world. Speak, Lord. What have you to say to me?